With Marcy Silman, I'm Steve Scher. Marcy, you have some, you kind of look over that creek. You have good birds around your house.
We have a lot of birds, and we have, you know, strange little species of falcons that nobody sees.
Oh, how cool.
It is really cool. I hear them more often than I see them, though.
Thornton Creek, right?
I live on Thornton Creek.
Do you think they're smart, these birds?
Well, I'm sure they have their own intelligence system because they know how to build nests, have babies, find food.
You and Noah Stricker would get along. Noah Stricker says birds are smart. They understand game theory. They make art. His passion for birds was sparked in part by the Sir David Attenborough's BBC TV nature shows. Mine too. Stricker is an Oregon native. He's traveled the world to study birds. He did a stint with penguins in the Antarctic. He's written a book about his passion, The Things with Feathers, The Surprising Lives of Birds and What They Reveal About Being Human. Stricker says it doesn't really matter what bird you watch. Pick almost any bird and will soon start doing something interesting and familiar.
And sometimes they'll start doing things that maybe remind you of things that people do. And that's maybe the thing that I learned most writing this book, is that by studying bird behavior, ultimately, often we learn lessons about ourselves.
Like what? What's your example of that?
Birds can create artwork, like bowerbirds do in Australia and New Guinea. Almost any realm of bird behavior I found can almost be applied back to humans, right down to the basics. You know, birds need the same things that we do: food, water, shelter, a family, maybe the desire to leave a legacy.
A desire to leave a legacy? What birds have a desire to leave a legacy?
Yeah, if, you know, strictly speaking, scientifically, probably you're talking more about genetics and their desire to have offspring and continue on through the generations. But I think that birds have emotions and feelings similar to people, and that seems, the trend seems to be shifting. So a couple decades ago, if you started talking about feelings in birds, you'd immediately get accused of anthropomorphizing.
Right.
Which historically has been a huge sin for scientists because you're not being objective. But these days, the trend seems to be swinging the other direction. So if you don't allow for the possibility that other animals besides us have similar thoughts and feelings and emotions, then you're probably missing a lot of what it means to be a bird.
So do you have an example of that with the bowerbird? You think they're creating art, that they have a sense of their creation?
So bowerbirds are a type of bird that lives in Australia and New Guinea. And the male bowerbird builds this huge display that sometimes takes the form of a hut or a structure in the middle of the forest that he then decorates with bright objects. Can be flowers or beetle wings or berries, almost anything. And if you look at bowerbird bowers, that is an excellent example of something that pretty much fulfills every human definition of artwork, because it doesn't have any purpose other than visual communication. It's only to attract females. And when a female likes the bower, then she'll mate with the male bowerbird, and she'll go off and build her own nest and raise the chicks by herself while the male hangs out in his bachelor pad, hoping more females come by. And so the bower is this very beautiful visual object that has no structural purpose at all.
And they're making choices. The bowerbird is making choices in creating them.
And they seem to have visual aesthetics, and there's fads in the world of bowerbirds. Like some years they'll prefer one color of bright red berries, and then that'll shift. And bowerbirds in different places prefer different visual images. And so that can even lead to speciation, where bowerbirds in two different places will prefer different colors. You'll have like a goth subculture of bowerbirds that like black things. And eventually the females only choose the males that have black decorations, and they'll only mate with each other, and so they become separate species. So that's pretty cool. That's like artwork driving evolution, almost.
Yeah, a culture evolving.
Yeah, it is. It pretty much satisfies the definition of culture as well.
The Thing with Feathers is Noah Stricker's book about the surprising lives of birds and what they reveal about being human. What is revealed about being human in your study of hummingbirds?
Hummingbirds. Well, I think that hummingbirds offer us a cautionary tale of life in the fast lane. Hummingbirds live their whole lives at full speed. So They need to eat a certain amount of calories every hour virtually of every day because they're so small. They lose a lot of heat. They have a big surface area to volume ratio, and that basically means they just have to eat a lot of flower nectar and suck it down like rocket fuel all day long. And if they stop eating, they will die of starvation eventually. And so they can never slow down. A hummingbird can never stop to smell the flowers, so to speak. And it means that hummingbirds are just about the most vicious, mean, aggressive birds you're ever going to meet. They don't get along because they're so mean to each other because they can never slow down. So if you look at studies of like human pace of life in large cities, psychologists are very interested these days in like how fast people walk down the sidewalk on average in the world's biggest cities. And they've studied this over time, and it's kind of scary to me because in the past 10 or 15 years or so, our walking speed has increased from like, I don't know, 2.97 miles per hour to about 3.2 miles per hour. And that kind of suggests to me that we're speeding up and we're becoming more like hummingbirds. And looking at the way that hummingbirds live, I sure wouldn't want to be one.
Noah Stricker is author of The Thing with Feathers, The Surprising Lives of Birds and What They Reveal About Being Human. I like to go out to the Oregon coast, and we get to stay in a place in the Oregon coast where there's a wonderful road, and it's way out in the at the edge of the coast, and there's no houses all around, Camp Westwind. And I saw a pygmy owl there before, and you have a pygmy owl? You get pygmy owls where you live?
Yeah, just outside of Eugene, we have a pygmy owl that lives in our backyard. And
you tell me there's an easy way to call them.
It's super responsive, and pygmy owls' calls are fairly easy to imitate, so it's just a simple whistle. They go... And if you keep imitating them, they'll get very angry because they think you're another owl trespassing on their territory, and they'll fly in and check you out, and you can get a great look at them.
That's great. Do you have a lot of bird songs in your repertoire?
I can do a couple of owls that sound sort of similar. The saw-whet owl sounds like a pygmy owl, but it's more uplifted, so it kind of goes... And it just keeps going like that. And then there's the western screech owl, which has more of a low trill. So it's more like...
You specialized in owls, or do you do other calls too?
Well, other bird calls are more difficult because unlike humans, birds have a double vocal cord. So they can actually produce chords. And it's more difficult to imitate them. But I can do a few owls fairly well.
The Thing with Feathers is Noah Stricker's book about the surprising lives of birds and what they reveal about being human. Finally, one of the other birds you study is the vulture.
Well, vultures, I think, are fascinating. They're my favorite bird. People always ask me, Noah, what's your favorite bird in the whole world? And I always say turkey vulture, partly just for the shock value. But turkey vultures don't get much respect. Even though they're very common, you see them floating around in the sky all the time, they're fairly secretive. It's really hard to find a turkey vulture nest.
Is that
I've
right?
only ever seen one vulture nest in my entire life. They go to remote areas and nest in hollow logs and in caves and things like that.
They nest in caves?
Yeah, they do. The only nest I've ever seen was in a rocky cave, and it smelled pretty terrible. But turkey vultures are amazing birds. They can... you know, they eat dead stuff. That's their whole diet, is decomposing carcasses of animals. And it's been shown, I think, pretty definitively that vultures can process things like anthrax spores without any ill effect. They're so used to eating putrefied flesh that their digestion is basically rock solid. And they find their food just by their sense of smell. They can smell decaying carcasses from even a mile or two away and then follow their noses just to get to it. And then when they get there and start eating, vultures, just like the rest of us, have taste buds. So I think it's kind of ironic, given their diet, turkey vultures have an amazingly well-developed sense of smell, and they can taste, so they're probably enjoying their food maybe even more than we would if we were at some fine dining establishment.
I mean, you've written a popular book about birds. What do you want to do next?
I think it's really interesting to be in the space between hardcore, cutting-edge science, where people are finding out, you know, research study by research study about why birds do what they do and how they do it, and the general public, which is interested in birds, and there's millions and millions of people around North America who feed birds in their backyard but don't know much about them. And just, I think birds are so fascinating to people, almost viscerally, because they're all around everywhere. They're colorful. They're easy to see. Anywhere you go in the world, you're going to see birds. But when you go to new places, you always see new birds. They're an easy way to capture people's attention and then start making people care more about the environment around them.
Did you watch David Attenborough when you were growing up?
Oh, so getting back to vultures, he had an episode in his Life of Birds TV series where he went to Trinidad and took a piece of rotting meat and put it on the forest floor and then covered it up with leaf litter. And about 45 minutes later, this turkey vulture came out of nowhere and dug up the piece of meat because it could smell it. And I thought that was so cool as a sophomore in high school that I decided to try the same experiment at home. And I told my mom and dad I was going to go find a roadkill deer and put it in our front yard. And to their everlasting credit, they looked at me and they went, well, just keep it far enough from the house not to stink up the kitchen. And so I did it. Long story short, it's a hard, it's harder to find a good deer roadkill than you might think. It took me about a month of driving the back roads to find a flattened deer. But I drug it home, I put it out in the front yard, and spent about a week sitting next to this reeking carcass watching about 25 or 30 turkey vultures tear it apart. That, more than just about anything, is what has sparked my interest in bird behavior.
That's Noah Stricker. He's the author of The Things with Feathers, The Surprising Lives of Birds and What They Reveal About Being Human.
From KUOW, this is The Record. I'm Steve Scherr.